thrilled to have on the Bear Marriage Podcast some people I've never met in real life, but we have met online so many times. This is Stephanie, Jessica, and Jenna from Pastors Wives Tell All. Hi, guys.
Hey.
We are stoked to be here.
Yes,
we are. We love talking with you, Sheila.
Yeah, I feel like you're on the other side of the mic this time. Usually I'm talking on your podcast.
So yeah.
That's
yeah.
fun. And we're here to celebrate because next week you guys have a huge milestone. So your new book launches on Monday, I think. Pastor's Wife Tell All. I can never remember subtitles. Yes. I don't even remember my own subtitle. So your book is Pastor's Wives Tell All. And what is your subtitle?
Navigating Real Church Life with Honesty and Humor.
Yeah, yes. I love that. And you guys, anyone who knows, who follows you guys on Instagram, you know, you're always there. You're dancing, you're talking, and you're keeping it real. And you're really good friends in real life.
Yes, we are.
Best friends.
We live right around the corner from each other. Yeah.
Yeah, like I could literally jog to their house.
And we're at different churches too, different denominations, all the things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is so super cool. And I got a chance to read an early copy of your book. So thank you for that and got to endorse it. And I really appreciate that honor. And I thought as I was reading through it, I saw some themes that I just knew would resonate with my listeners. And those are the ideas of how can we stay authentic when we're in a culture which is really rewarding inauthenticity and mm-hmm. can make you quite sad and feel like you're trapped. But that sounds depressing, and the book isn't depressing. It's actually quite funny. But I think that's just something a lot of us struggle with.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. Authenticity is so hard. And I think that's one of the things that we love to talk about is to be authentic, to be yourself is really the thing that we need to be because that's who Christ created us to be, you know? But you can't be authentic until you learn who your identity lies in. Mm-hmm. And that's so hard for people to learn. And I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't learn that in my 20s. It was my 30s before I could kind of walk in my own skin and know who God called me to be. But then to share and be authentic in my friendships and to be vulnerable, that's very hard for me to do, to be vulnerable with the people of our church and our friends and even my husband on occasion, you know, to really bear all and let them know.
Yeah. Pun intended.
It is hard to be vulnerable and to be authentic when you live in a fishbowl. And that's what happens to pastors' wives, but it doesn't only happen to pastors' wives. I think a lot of us feel that way for different reasons. And I think that's what people will really relate to in your book. Of course, because I am who I am, I want to focus on certain chapters more than others in our conversation. Yeah. And the one about how pastors' wives get headaches too, I thought it was great, or fake headaches too. Yes, indeed.
You're welcome.
And you opened that chapter with, I think, just some real honesty about some of the awful ways that a lot of us were taught about sex. So, Stephanie, tell me about culottes.
Oh heavens. Listen, I grew up in a church, and it wasn't like this at my home, which is funny. It was just at the church and the church activities and my Christian school I went to. Girls and modesty was probably one of the top topics. And your body was something that you had to hide. It could be evil. It could be used as a weapon. It's this awful thing. And that's what I grew up hearing over and over and over again. And we would walk around in these parachute pants is what I felt like, but they weren't pants. They just came like below your knee and were awkwardly like flapping everywhere as you walked. It was a whole awkward situation. I even had to swim in them a couple times.
Oh my word.
There were no guys there. It was all girls. And we were told we had to wear the culottes and a t-shirt to swim.
I feel like can I just say as the mother of two lifeguards, how dangerous that is?
Yep. Yes.
Yep.
Like that is seriously dangerous. We should never, you're not supposed to swim in anything that is not a bathing suit because just not good. Not good at all.
Oh, 100%. But the safety didn't matter. What mattered was we need to protect the guys and their eyes and what they're seeing and we could cause them to fall. And that put a lot of shame on us, which is why I resonate so much with you, Sheila, and what you're doing in your work.
Yeah.
Because I was left with a lot of distorted views and thinking. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time for me to break free. And I'm still breaking free from some of it.
Yeah.
There are times I'm still going right back into that weird, like, oh gosh, is this okay? Or I'm feeling awkward with my husband. And it shouldn't be that way. But I know where it came from. I know the root. I look back and I go, it's those darn culottes. What the
heck? Okay, Jessica, tell me about the Oreo.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that.
This is disgusting. Just, so everybody
still
listening.
Like Oreos.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that this actually happens.
Yeah. So when I was in middle school, I had a teacher that was trying to talk about just virginity and abstinence and all of that, and being used, and calling it being used. And I remember him opening up a, you know, Oreo and talking about, like, you know, this is going to be an example. You know, if I'm going to pass this Oreo to the first person and let them bite or lick the icing, and then you're going to pass it to the next person. And of course, only one or two in, we were like, ooh, we don't want to do this. And he's like, that's what it's like being used. Like, no one will want you. You are, you know, like tainted. You have been used. And so it was just like, oh gosh. But like, I remember thinking back going, man, so many people that do, you know, have sex before marriage and find Jesus or knew that they made a mistake, like, they're going to go with that all the way to their marriage bed, thinking that no one's going to want to be with them. And also, we would always hear, like, you're taking all of those people that you slept with or did things with, you're taking them to your marriage bed. Right. You know, that was something that I was taught,
which is like so warped when you think about it.
But it was just, it was so gross, but it did, it like hit me. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do any of that. I don't want to be used. I don't want to take people to my marriage bed other than my husband, you know, and so many things like that. That's just, I know there was good intentions. Mm-hmm. He learned it from somebody else, which then he taught it to us, but it was just gross and really gross. Yeah, I can't get it out of my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think none of us will ever look at Oreos again the same
You're
way.
Well.
That is awful. But I Jenna was making this point in the book, and I love how in the book, you know, you all tell your own stories, but to sum it all up, you were just taught that boys are sexual in a way that girls aren't.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
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 That I wasn't supposed to be, actually. Like, yeah. That was weird. Or wrong,
and which then, is so wrong.
Yeah. And then we were the gatekeepers for not just our own, you know, mm-hmm. virginity, but for theirs too. Mm-hmm. Like as if we could cause them to not stumble or have these thoughts. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, you go to youth camp and, you know, all the boys were like playing basketball with their shirts off, all sweaty, you know, and then the girls were told cover up, like wear one piece bathing suit, but then also put shorts and a t-shirt over it. And as if we were going to cause them to stumble by wearing, you know, by not wearing a t-shirt.
Because our belly buttons are so sexy.
So sexy. Our shorts. Mm.
Yeah. But all of this, and we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, when you get these messages when you're 12, 13, 14, 15, it carries with you into your marriage. Mm-hmm. And how are you supposed to put those things behind you? And I think one of the interesting things about pastors' wives, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of pastors' wives tend to come from a lot of the super conservative, like you get a lot of the super conservative influence because, you know, if you're going to marry a pastor, chances are you went to Bible college or seminary, or you were in the places where future pastors hung out. So those tend to be conservative spaces. Mm-hmm. You often went, you know, to the youth rallies, to these summer camps. Like I know growing up, I heard the really toxic messages, not from my church. It was from the extra stuff that we did, you know, like those youth rallies, the huge youth rallies, the huge summer camps. So it was your kids who were the most involved, your kids who were the most Christian, the mm-hmm. most, I don't mean most Christian as in had the biggest faith, but like the ones that were always showing
always
up.
At the church. Always
they
at the
tended church. To be the ones who got these messages more than any others. And then you guys ended up marrying pastors.
Yeah. Could get away from it.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I'm going to be honest. And even early in the youth ministry days, we had little purity talks and things because that's what I was taught, that you tell these girls and that's what you do. And I didn't realize at the time that any guilt I felt or shame, and I honestly didn't have sex before marriage, but I feel like, oh, I had gone too far. And that's affecting me now. Mm-hmm. But really that was shame that mm-hmm. shouldn't have been there, because I was free from that and God had saved me from that. Mm-hmm. But I was still living in guilt and then telling them, well, you're going to have this, you're going to have guilt and shame, you know, if you do this. And I'm trying to scare them, just like it was done to me. And I hate that I was like that in my young 20s before I knew better.
Yeah. I did it too. I still regret a couple of newspaper columns that I wrote in my local area, you know, but when you know better, you do better, right?
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Yeah. And a lot of us were just, we grew up with this and we're victims of it. Okay. So I have a special issue with the way that the churches treat pastors and their wives around sex. And this may be a commonality that comes up a lot in this podcast episode, but why is it that the church expects the pastor and the pastor's wife to talk about sex and to be sex experts? Because I see that a lot, where I've seen that in so many churches where, and now the pastor's wife is going to talk to us about how to be like really support our husband sexually. It's like, do you guys ever feel just awkward?
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't, thank goodness our church is not like that.
Oh, thank goodness. Yes.
Yeah. I don't think any of ours are.
No, what we're in now is very, all of us are in much healthier places, much healthier churches that aren't doing those same things that we grew up with. But I know exactly what you're talking about because I have been there.
Yes. And that was one of the things I was going to say. Like, I think that we have to be vulnerable. It is the hardest thing to be vulnerable about when you are a pastor and a pastor's wife. Like, but I think that like there are moments where you can share things like that. Especially when my husband and I do a lot of marriage counseling and talking with women and men. That conversation comes up a lot. Or before they get married, mm-hmm. there is a talk that we talk about that, you know, and share. And so I think that, I don't think that that should be put on our shoulders, because we are just like you. We have our struggles and we have our great moments. And that's the same with our marriages. Mm-hmm. We don't have perfect marriages. I just like let everyone else out there know our marriages are not perfect. They are a work in progress, and we have to try every day to love that person and to not be selfish. And that goes into the marriage bed as well. I think that those talks should come from vulnerable conversations and should come from speakers that, like Sheila, like bring Sheila in, bring her in to talk to your churches. And if the pastor's wife wants to talk about it, then of course, you know, some feel very called to talk about that, then do what you're passionate about, but don't put that pressure on the pastor and the wife to be the only ones carrying that load.
But I think where the pressure comes from is, okay, the pastor and his wife. The pastor preaches a lot on verses about marriage, about family. It comes up naturally in scripture. Even if you're going verse by verse, you're going to come to these scriptures about marriage and family. And so instantly, as these church attenders hear their pastor talking about marriage, they think, oh, I bet he is just the perfect husband. He has all the answers. He knows all the things. Which therefore his wife must be the best wife ever. And usually, you know, your husband is trying to talk you up a little bit, the good things from the stage, or a lot of men are doing that and they're not talking about the hard things. They're not being completely vulnerable and saying, hey, you know, my wife and I, we got in a fight the other night. Now ours are pretty good about doing that now. and just saying that, like, we all sin, we all fall, we all struggle. And the problem has started at the top,
right?
Because when we share those things, we're not vulnerable. We're not authentic. Mm-hmm. I can say that word. And then it bleeds over into their thinking, wow, they must just really have it all together. I need to ask them all the questions about all things marriage.
Yeah, they just think we're experts.
We're not experts.
Mm-mm, we're not. We struggle just like you.
We'll point you to a good therapist.
In all areas. There you go.
Yeah. And I think that that's so important to understand because I've seen these things happen. I mean, I get sent them all the time. You know, a pastor and his wife give a sex talk and it's horrible, you know, and it's like, but we should never put pastors and their wives in that situation where that's expected. Right. I just think that's a lot. And I've also been in situations where, you know, you're in a women's Bible study or you're in a women's event and a topic comes up and there's some discussion as to which way is the right way. And then everyone turns to the pastor's wife to make the final decision, right. You know, to pronounce judgment as to what is right. And so you are expected to be experts in a lot of things when you're really not necessarily. I mean, you all have your areas of expertise. Everybody does. Everybody has like a few areas where, yes, I know an awful lot about this, but none of us is experts on everything.
Right.
And I think that that's what contributes to this, this pressure to be inauthentic that we have to always fight against. Because it's not coming necessarily from you. It's coming from the expectations that people are heaping on you.
Yep. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. A lot.
So we hope that you read that book and you hear that we are just like you.
Yes. Yeah. And especially with parenting, this is difficult because this affects your kids.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you said that there's two different expectations for preachers' kids, that they're going to either be hellions or else they're going to be these perfect.
Yeah. Bible scholars.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Bible scholars.
Yeah.
Shout out books of the Bible and be able to, you know.
Whatever you need, they've got it.
They can counsel you at 5 years old.
Yes.
It is so funny though that it's like the polar opposites of each other, but that those are both like, you know, stereotypes on pastor's kids. Mm-hmm.
It's very true.
Yeah. So how do you, and you guys did a really good job like in the book of trying to maintain, you know, your kids' privacy and not like, yeah. And not putting them on display either, just telling stories. But how do you protect your kids when they're in a fishbowl like that?
Oh my goodness. That's hard. It's really hard. But I do think that bringing them into what you're doing, like, and being honest with them about a lot of things, obviously depending on what their age is as to what you say to them. But I think that just making them a part of the ministry is huge. Letting them know that it's a part of our world, not just ours as husband and wife. But I mean, you can't protect them from everything, you know, but I do think that you can have those conversations with them and let them know that you're not perfect, like, and that it's okay to make mistakes, you know, because a lot of pastors' kids feel like they can't make mistakes.
And I think also, like, to go along with what you're saying, Jenna, is how we are to them in private needs to be how we are to them with the people of our church and out in public. Because I think they need to see that we are the same parents, that we aren't trying to put on this fake, you know, mask of parenting when we're around people.
Right.
Because that's one thing I know that a lot of people have grown up with. They would say, you know, I know people that said, you know, my dad was pastor and he would act like he's the best friend to everyone as he was talking to them in church and then get in the car and all he would do is yell at us. All he would do is abuse us. All he would do is, like, they had complete different lives. So we need to make sure that we are being vulnerable with our kids and making sure that they see that we are the same. Mm-hmm. But we also aren't putting expectations on them. And I know I did early on, you know, when they were younger going, you know, I felt like they needed to look perfect as we walked into church, that they needed to be quiet and sit still. I mean, gosh, I used to, like, when we were at conferences, I would have them like sitting for hours, you know, just be perfect. Don't talk. Don't whisper. Don't, because for us, it looked like if the kids were not doing right, then it looked bad on us and therefore it looked bad on our husbands. And therefore the church would judge us, you know, that we must be doing something wrong behind the doors. But to really, truly be vulnerable with our kids is such a hard thing, but so good to do. And then also I would just say, you know, one thing for us is letting them know that they are part of the ministry. Mm-hmm. Like Jenna said, like, you know, if Jonathan and I have a couple coming to our house and they're sitting on our couch and we're having marriage counseling, but they have a child or, you know, we're like, hey girls, you got to go to your room for a little bit. Like we kind of say, you get to be part of this ministry. You can go in that room and play and hang out, but also pray for us, pray with us. We need your prayers. Like they are important. Or you watching their toddler while we're talking with them, that is part of the ministry. Because if you're not watching their toddler and keeping that toddler focused, then we can't focus on what God's called us to do. So it's a team effort. So really bringing them in, but also letting them have time without church. You know, if sometimes I'm like, nope, I'm going to let them stay at home because they just need to be. Because I want it to always be a place that they love. Yeah. And so far, I mean, knock on wood, and I know that could change, but so far they love being at church and they're like, Mom, it's okay. I want to go to church. I want to be there. But we always have those voices and hear those PK kids going, I hated being at church. I was at the church all the time, like Monday through Sunday. So we also don't want to put that on our kids.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I think there's a balance. There's a healthy balance in between letting them in on the ministry and then also letting them know that, okay, we were called to this. You didn't have a choice and you're in this house now. And we get that. And you can rest and you can take a break. But also just one more practical thing for me and my kids, I tell them we can talk about anything. Mm-hmm. I will not judge you. If you're struggling with something, you can tell me. And sometimes they tell me more than I want to know. I'm be honest with you. Like I even have like a safe spot where one of my children, he really likes to go to the safe place and talk with me. And it's just our place and everything stays there. He can tell me anything. There will be no judgment. There will be no getting into trouble. You just tell me your thoughts and your feelings and whatever. And so two of my children especially are very open. And the third one, he still will come to me, but two of them love that. And they need to talk out things. And one of them, even when, you know, they mess up or they said that, usually I know about it because she just flat tells me. It's like, I need to tell you something. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, 2 years ago, when you told me to, I'm not kidding. Like this happens. It's like the little Holy Spirit like comes on her. But I love that they feel comfortable to do that because I think that right there, if you build a good relationship with your kid and they are struggling with church things, they're going to tell you. Yeah, and that's so important. They've got to know that they can be honest with you and say, I don't want to go to church today. I've actually had one child who really was having a hard time on Wednesday and we have youth group that night. It's busy. I took him home. We just went home, the two of us. I told my husband, I said, he is falling apart. We don't need to be here.
Yeah.
We need to go home. And my husband's like, okay, go. Like, and thankfully I have a husband like that who's not worried about what people are going to think if we leave or what's happening. And that right there, I think goes a long way with our kids.
Yeah. I think one of the other things is I pray that I'm really glad we had a lot of hurt from the church that we were a part of. And, you know, my husband what ended up getting fired, which we talk about that on our podcast. And I remember for a long time, we're still in the same community. And, I just remember even at a young age, the girls didn't quite understand what was happening at the time. And we were adopting Olivia in the process, from China. And, but now like when we drive past that church, they're like, isn't that the church that hurt you? And they're just like, you know, so like, and I'm like, yes, you know, it was a really rough time, but we had beautiful years there too. But, you know, God got us out of that church and now look where we're at and just try to like, let them not be angry at that church, you know, because it's not all that church, you know, the people inside that church, some of them hurt us. And, you know, I think that's really hard for PK kids. I think that's where a lot of things happen. They see horrible things happening and then they get a really warped view of the church. And then that's what really messes with their head as they get older. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have seen that again and again. And I know that this is something that we, like in the work that we do, we struggle with as well. Is to just not talking about the work we do with my grandkids who are still so young, because you don't want them to get jaded. You don't want them to think, oh, all these Christians are terrible. Yes. You know, because it is a warped view. Because the truth is, yes, some people hurt me, but some people did not. And most people didn't. And most people, you know, treated us well.
Exactly.
But there's always those some, right? There's always those some.
Sure, and they are doing some damage.
Yeah. another big theme in your book, and this isn't unique to pastors' wives, but I think that there is something special or it manifests itself differently is just the constant stress of always being on call. You know, when your spouse is always on call and when you're just carrying the emotional load of what so many people are going through in your congregation. I remember when our son was really sick, and then when he passed away, it was in the middle of the night, and we called my pastor, and he came down to the hospital at 3 a.m. and he sat with us, and then he had to go home and he had to go to work the next day. And I always really, really appreciated him for that. Mm. But you can't do that every night.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can't do that all the time. And how do you draw boundaries as a family where you're still serving people who need you, but you got to have your own time too?
Oh, I think we can all give advice on that. You want to start?
Yeah.
I would say, you know, boundaries are huge. For me specifically, like, we're calendar people. Like if it's not on our calendar, then it does not exist.
And so, ADHD props.
Yes. So my husband and I have to be communicating about what's happening when, as far as, you know, just our day-to-day ministry stuff goes. And he's not in a like lead pastor role. He's not a youth pastor right now. He's a production director and he disciples, you know, his team at this time. And so that looks different for him every single week, but we make sure to put it on the calendar. And I think as long as you are protecting those boundaries and you are spending time with your family and your spouse, alone time with your spouse, I think that when those times come up where it is a spontaneous thing and you feel like, I think the Lord will speak to you. And because there have been times when I have felt like, oh, I need to go be there for this person right now. And it wasn't planned and it wasn't on my calendar. And I may have had to, you know, ignore something that was on my calendar. But I think as long as you have your boundary set and you are, you know, spending time with the Lord and your family time is your priority in your first ministry, I think that when those times come, it makes it a lot easier and less stressful on the family. So I just think that's huge. Just, you got to have your boundaries.
Yeah.
Communicate all the things.
Yeah. I would say that we are pretty good with boundaries. We definitely, my husband is a lead pastor at this time. But we've also been, we were in youth ministry for a long time. But I will say it is hard, like, because both of us are very relational. Mm-hmm. So we do spend a lot of time on the phone. We do spend a lot of time, on occasion on vacation, sitting, staring at the beach, counseling people through things. So I think in those moments, especially in our 20s and early 30s, I think we could have done better. I think that we have to like get to the point where we know that these people can function without us. I think that's very hard a lot of times when you want to be there for people and you want to go sit at the hospital with them. And my husband would have been there right with you and I would have wanted him to be there. I probably would have been there too. You know, like that works for us, but that's not every pastor and their wife, because all personalities are different and we're all created differently. But I would say that, you know, we don't turn off our phones. And that's, could be a bad thing sometimes, because I'm just like, okay, like I'm not God. They need to go to God first and then get help. But also we really try to, at our church, our village, we have village groups, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, small groups that yeah. meet during the week. And so we really try to push and create a new culture that you don't just need the pastor and the pastor's yeah, wife.
That's right. Good.
Right. So that's a creating a new culture of you need the people, the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. So if there's a hospital, you call your village group leader and they come rally around mm-hmm. you. Of course, they're going to let us know and we can make a choice of what we're going to do with that. But you don't need us. You just need the yeah. people. Like, yeah. stop putting all the pressure on us, you know? And I know yeah. that's hard for big churches, but I mean, big churches come bigger staff too, that can mm-hmm. go and do those hospital visits and go do the counseling.
I remember many years ago, there was a woman, her husband was in the military. And so they had just been posted to my town and she'd only been attending for like 3 weeks, but she had been out to women's Bible study and sat beside me. And her son was diagnosed with diabetes. He was only 1.5 and he had to be admitted to the hospital. and her husband was at work. And so I'm going, she gave me her key. She called me. I went down to the hospital. I got her house key and I had to go into her house and get her a week's worth of clothes, you know?
Wow.
It's like, this is a woman I don't even know when I'm going through her underwear drawer, but like.
That's amazing though. Good job. Yeah.
That is your village, right?
Yes, it is.
You just have to do that.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And it's funny because last night, actually, I had a college student, or I'd say college and career, because technically she's career, but she reached out and was like, hey, do you have some time tonight or tomorrow morning where we could talk? And I knew that today was going to be just nonstop. And so I said, sure, let me just get home, get my kids to bed, all the things, you can come over. Well, it didn't happen the way I thought, because two of my children in two different ways needed me. And it got to the point where I knew it was going to be late. And so I just reached out and said, hey, I'm so sorry. Can we reschedule? Because I've got two kids just really needing me, that sort of thing. And she was totally fine with it. And I think sometimes we think in our heads that people, they need us right now and they cannot wait. But Jessica's right. They can go to God.
Yeah.
They can sit on it for a minute before they talk to us anyway. Yeah. And that gives her a little more time to pray and process before coming and talking to me. And she was okay with it. And there are times, of course, if there's a death or if there's some, I mean, yes, we drop everything and we're like, and our kids get it. They're actually praying for them. They're going, that's so sad. That's so hard. Especially my daughter. She's so like tender, and she's, even though she's tough, she's very tender when it comes to people hurting or suffering or death. And she will pray right then with tears in her eyes for these people. And I think like bringing them in on that too, going, this is what we can do right now. Yeah, daddy's got to leave because he needs to go be with his family. But, you know, we can pray for that family right now because that's really hard. And that just gives them more empathy too. So once again, it's that balance of bringing them in, but then also, okay, saying no to a few things when those things can wait. And I think people just don't realize a lot more things can wait than we want to say can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is something I think it's not only pastors' families. It's, I know we went through this a lot because my husband's a pediatrician in a town where it was really underserviced. And so there were lots of days where there was nobody on call. And when there's no one on call, they call him anyway, you know? And I remember my youngest, Katie's second birthday party, my husband got called away because there was a shaken baby, you know, who eventually passed away. And it's like, you can't say no to those things. Even though it's not technically your job, like I'm not on call, this isn't my responsibility, but like, then whose is it?
Yeah,
if it's not mine, then whose is it? And so he had to go. And what we found sometimes is that the only way we could get any peace was to go on vacation. And so we did get out of town quite a bit when in those years, and we just needed that because sometimes life is just rough. Like there are a lot of demands on you because of your job. Mm-hmm. And and even being mindful of different strategies, but that's just so important to talk to each other about because it can get so busy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and remembering quality over quantity, quantity. Like you can be with your kid all day long, but still not spend time with them. You can be with your husband all day long and not spend time with them. So that's another thing, kind of like what Jenna was talking about. Like if I know that, you know, if I'm home with my husband for 30 minutes, then we are going to do something very intentional in those 30 minutes. Right. And it's going to feel even better, you know, than spending a whole day with him being in opposite rooms.
Right.
Like be intentional about that. Be intentional with your children. So then when you do have to go away, it doesn't feel as stressful.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we were talking a minute ago about how, you know, our kids can see when other people hurt us and then can kind of go all mama bear on behalf of their parents. But I'll tell you that the biggest test of my faith over the last few years has been other people, like how other people who are supposed to know Christ, who claim to know Christ, how other people have treated me or have just messed up things that should have worked easily. Stephanie, you had a story in the book about that youth pastor vote, like when the church was voting on whether or not to have his youth pastor. Can you tell that? Because that was really, that hit me.
Okay. So you're talking about the first church that we went to interview for. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So we really felt that God was leading us to this place. I mean, 100% went, love the people, felt like they loved us too. We're just excited about taking this first step into ministry. We're like, yes, God's saying yes to this. So we're going to say yes. And then the bottom fell out. Mm-hmm. So my husband gets the call, and I still remember it because I was with him. And at the time, we were actually just engaged. We were not married yet. And he and I looked at him, and I'm all like, because I knew it was the call, because I knew the number that was calling. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's him. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm waiting. I'm going like this. Like I am excited. And he just looked like someone had knocked him to the ground. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him. I was like, what's happening? What's going on? And he said, it's a no. And I'm like, what do you mean it's a no? Are you being funny? Like, I thought he was joking. He said, no, we got a 74% vote and we needed 75% to get the job. And I looked and I went, what? He said, and it's worse. And I'm like, what do you mean it's worse? Because the whole time he's on the phone, he's just nodding his head and he's looking like surprised, shocked, all of these things. And he said, the church is like splitting. And I was blown away. The pastor was upset. He had decided to go ahead and resign. It was a whole thing. The whole thing blew up. And the friend that we had made at this church, who happened to be a deacon, was crying on the phone and going, I don't understand. I don't understand what happened. Yeah. And in that situation, I remember being like, God, what are you doing? Like, what is happening? Like, you called us to this place and now the bottom's falling out.
And for everyone listening, it wasn't that they didn't like your husband. It was that a few families didn't think there was money in the budget for youth pastor.
They just didn't think it was the right time. We really don't need a full-time youth pastor. Yes, money. And then there was this also funniness about how he wasn't married yet. Yeah, he's going to get married, but he's not married yet. There was just this weird, it was just a few families, but those few families waited until the last minute and shared all of these things and these arguments broke out and it blew up. And that was our first taste of ministry life. And we were going, we haven't even started. And already everything's gone wrong.
Welcome to church.
I had this envision as a child that church was supposed to be a place where, you know, you get to be an adult and now life makes sense. And there's no more fussing and fighting and gossiping and arguing. No, we're, you know, for the most part, church was a good place. That was in my head because that is what was ingrained in me. And I didn't see all the ugly because a lot of the ugly was swept under the rug and behind closed doors. So it was shocking for both of us.
Yeah. And I can just imagine. And, you know, you think that God is bringing you somewhere. It looks like he's opening doors. And then these few people can really wreck things. And I've seen that happen over and over again in a church where a church looks like it's doing well, you know, it's serving the community. It's making disciples. And then there's just a few people, often power hungry people, who seem to just get control and wrench it away. And how do you support your spouse when they're the target of that?
Man, I know Jessica's probably going to have a lot to share on that. I'll start. She'll do all of the finishing touches, I'm sure. It's funny because my husband is actually the stronger one in our relationship. He's very steady and very... he doesn't care what people think of him, which I've always been like, how do you not care? Like what people think? He's like, if God said to do it, you just do it. And we just deal with it. And yeah, he was upset in the moment, but then he very quickly bounced back and was like, all right, God, what's next? Mm-hmm. And whereas I am going freaking out, like, but God told us to come here. So what in the world is he doing? I don't get it. And I have all the questions. And so really, it was him calming me down. But in that moment, I did tell him, I'm like, there's got to be, and I did bring it back down for a minute. And I said, there's got to be something else. Like, God has us. And I think at that time I thought he could do no wrong. I mean, we weren't even married yet. So I'm going, he hung the moon. I'm like, you're so great. Like, you're such a wonderful youth pastor. But then like now, even when people talk bad about him, because that has happened before, I go, they're not seeing you right. Or I get a little defensive. And I think that helps him too, because he's like, she's got my back. You know, when I get defensive for him, because if I don't, then it's like, wait, do you think I'm doing a really bad job too? You know, mm-hmm. And I think just being mindful, like I'm honest with him, but also I try not to discourage him with my words. And I don't always get that right. But I think when I can point out the truth that I see in him, of the good that I see in him, that helps. Just those words. And he thinks he's not a words of affirmation guy, but I can tell that words help a lot.
I think most of us are.
Yeah. I was thinking of Ian and you with that certain situation at another church.
Oh,
with the letter. And
yes.
How you kind of handled that.
Yeah. At a previous church we were at, it was a very, very traditional. It was a church that we had not, the type of church, we had never been in that type of church before, but we were there for a total of 4 years, and there wasn't a whole lot of discipleship on really any of the staff's part from what I can remember. I just remember that my husband worked so hard, and he had multiple roles at this church, and even was expected to do things that weren't technically in his job description, which that can happen. But we always joked that he wore so many hats at this church. And if he did have a morning off, he would always be called off the hook multiple times. And so when we had finally felt like the Lord was calling us away from this church, we actually gave the church a maybe year and a half notice. Which I know that's a long time,
it's fabulous.
But we knew that they were really in no hurry to fill positions. Like that's just what we had seen over the past few years. And so that's why he went ahead and gave them that big of a heads up. And the entire year and a half that we were there at the end, there was no direct, they made no moves to try to find somebody to fill his position. And he was really good at discipleship and, you know, teaching other people, but there were other people that were under him that were super frustrated as well. And, the type of church we were in, we had literally seen a new pastor come in maybe 3 times since like in 4 years. So it was crazy. So this last pastor that came in, I just remember he was only there for maybe a month, before my husband and I left. And he started telling people in the church that loved us, and he didn't know because he hadn't been there. He didn't know us at all, but he started telling people in the church that my husband left things in a mess when we left. And oh, this wife right here, I was so mad because I was like, anybody who knows us and knows our hearts and knows how much my husband did and how hard he worked and just how hard he loved people, they know that that's not his heart. But yet here's this man who doesn't even know us. And he's telling people, and those people came to us and they were like, we just want to let you know, this is what's being said. And I don't like confrontation. I don't often feel as if I want to go, you know, burn a house down, as Jessica would say sometimes about some of her stories. But I wrote an email to the lead pastor and I was like, I can't leave things unsaid about this. Like, this is not fair to my husband. We gave you guys, you know, a year and a half notice before we left, and there's been no interest in trying to fill that position. And that's not our fault. And, you know, my husband has worked above and beyond, you know, to help, you know, not leave things
a mess.
Yeah. But yeah, this is what's being said about him. And he responded, you know, and was like, thank you for, you know, saying this. I never actually got a chance to talk to that man. I had to forgive him. And he was not there long after we left, from what I hear. But man, I did, you know, as Stephanie said, I just had to reaffirm with my husband, like, hey, babe, like, you know that that's not true, right? Because you went above and beyond at this church. you fought tooth and nail to bring that church forward and to disciple people. And, you know, that's all you can do is just know that that's what you did. And that's not what God thinks about you, you know? Yeah. But that is hard. That is so hard when you hear somebody saying negative things about your husband or they're going through something like that, but reaffirming them, and just, you know, letting them know who they are in Christ and just saying all those sweet things to them, that definitely helps. Especially my husband is words of affirmation. Yeah, and so he really appreciated that.
Well, they both said a great deal. So I would say the only thing, go read the book if you want to hear about church hurt, because I talk a lot about it.
Yes, she does.
But I will say, I am that girl that was ready to go burn houses down. I was angry. I think it was righteous anger because the enemy had come in to the lead pastor and a few people and had really done a lot of damage and ended up, of course, secret meetings, ended up firing my husband and then lying about it to the whole congregation of why we left. And so I would say with that, I really had to lean on, and he did too, on Exodus 14:14, which we talk about a lot of, be still and the Lord will fight for you. And so in those moments of me wanting to literally go have a knockdown drag out, and I could envision it in my head and it was lovely. and I had to remember that Jesus can do even better than me. Mm-hmm. And so I had to rest in that because it was really hard. So during that time, we just had to really encourage each other, sometimes not talk about it, be around people that were going to hold us accountable and tell us who we were in Christ and that these things were not truth.
Yeah.
Because it can still, even if you know the truth, it still can get to you on any given day. So you definitely have to have that full body armor on constantly, or just even the smallest thing can get to you, or you can just envision things and it really brings you down. So yeah, definitely have to let the Lord fight and just stay closer. And it really did build us, our relationship. It created a closer bond in that moment. And we learned a lot on how not to be as pastors. Mm-hmm. So we walked into the next season of life going, we do not want to be that. So what we learned is how not to be. And that's truly super important to do. So,
Yeah. I think the church has a unique ability to hurt people like that, because there's all these power struggles, right? And often that happens in church because, you know, you got a group of people who's all together and they are looking for leadership of some sort. And so people who want to be in power, who should often never be in power, but they gravitate to church spaces. And so even if most people are healthy, it just takes a couple, right? It just takes a couple and it can really hurt. And you see that often with a lot of professions, caring professions, where people can really get chewed up and swallowed out. Because you wanted to help. You're in this because you care and you love. Yeah. And yet other people are not necessarily in it for the same reasons.
Yeah.
And that's hard when it's a Christian space because, you know, we're supposed to be focused on Jesus and not everybody is.
Right. Yeah. Got to have discernment. That's for sure.
Yeah. Not everyone is. Not that in itself is hard to accept and process. Another big theme of your book that I think comes out, and definitely your social media, because you're very active on social media and you're very funny, is the idea of friendship. Mm. And that's what you guys model all the time. You guys met each other in different weird ways and you stuck close together. You have matching tattoos.
sure.
Yeah. That's so cute. But it's not like you guys have always had a lot of friends, and friendship has been a struggle, you said in the book, for some of you. So can you speak to that? Because I know there's a lot of people listening who are like, I need a friend and I don't have a friend.
Well, for me, for years, I had this problem of trying to be whatever anybody needed me to be. So I tried to be everybody's best friend, but I didn't really let people see me. I don't think I was ever fully vulnerable in friendships. And it came to bite me in the behind when we were in our first church ministry. I was trying so hard to be everything I needed to be to fit in that people were turned away from it. They turned away from me, or they misunderstood me, where all I wanted was relationship. All I wanted was to see these people thrive. But the trying to be something I wasn't was pushing them away. And so for years, I would sob. And then it turned into some people, there was some gossip and different things that would get back to me that really cut deep. Because these were people I really loved and really wanted to accept me. And as I was going through that time, and I am crying out to God, literally just sobbing constantly, like, Lord, please fix this. What do I do? Help me to know what to do to make it right. And every time I tried to make it right, when I did kind of bare my soul, it blew up in my face. And so I just remember thinking, like, Lord, I just want people who want me for me and will see me and I can see them. And I just want to be comfortable in a relationship for once, like fully. And not that I've never been, but when you move away from home and you're not around your family, you've gone to college and your closest friends all live in different states, that's hard. It's hard. You feel kind of isolated. And when we moved to this town where we're in, I remember thinking, I'm going to be 100% myself. You can take me or leave me, but this is who I am. I'm a little bit loud and weird and crazy. So I'm not going to act like I'm not, so that you're all like weirded out when I start acting like myself, because that would happen. And so I noticed that I started actually building some friendships even within my church. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. Like, they like me for me. They think I'm cool. Like, me. And then as the Lord was laying on my heart about ministry, and I knew I was called to something, it had not fully come to fruition yet, but I felt like God wanted to bring the church together through women. So diversity, just all of these things, that was really heavy on my heart. And so I thought, what better way than a women's conference? Let's do a women's conference. But it's not going to be my conference. It's not going to be my church's conference. It's going to be the community conference. So we want everyone to come together. And so I started reaching out, trying to find other women in leadership and other churches. And so I ended up getting connected with Jessica, because her husband and her are at another church leading, of course, even today, the same church. Such a precious church. And I had heard so many great things about her. And they're like, you have got to get her on your team. She's so good at everything. And I'm like, okay, well, bring her to me. Let's do this. And there was something different about her. When we got on the phone and we talked, it was like for a solid hour about everything. And I remember thinking, wow, this is what I've been looking for. And I got off the phone. I'm like, I want her to be my friend. I'm telling my husband this, like, oh my gosh, like it felt like a first date or something. It was weird. So I'm like, but we just connected. Like, I feel like she's this soul that's been meant to be with mine. I don't know. And then she and Jenna had already been building this relationship. They had served at that church that had hurt Jessica for several years, had never really gotten close, but then finally started after that, ended up going to coffee or doing a few things together with their families. And they were already like, oh my gosh, here's this girl who's just as weird as I am. Like, we can be fully stupid together and we both just laugh hysterically. And so she ends up introducing me to Jenna. And then all three of us, we were just like, oh my gosh, we can be fully ourselves. We don't have to worry about them judging what I say or do. These are the first people I had fully opened up. There was a couple things in my life that I had never told anybody ever. And I opened up to them and they were fully loving and fully committed to being like, Stephanie, that was so long ago. And that's not who you are. And like speaking truth over me, but like, yeah, if you mess up, but you got to move on. And like just speaking truth or calling me out, but then not saying, well, I don't want anything to do with you anymore, but saying, hey, when you said this, it hurt my feelings or it bothered. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I never even thought, I'm so sorry. And like, we could talk those things out. And there was humility among everyone and just saying like, I love you and I want the best for you. And I had never experienced that before. And so now we realize we know what we have is special. It is not lost on us. And I thank God for it every day. And I'm like, Lord, I know that seasons come and go and friendships come and go. I'm like, but please let this one stay. But I know that we have to have open hands for whatever God has for us. But I think like when you finally do have open hands and you say, Lord, I'm going to be exactly who you created me to be, whether people like it or not, you're more apt to find those people that are your people. It's much easier to find them, I think.
Yeah. You have to definitely be vulnerable.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's where realness happens and real true friendship, or friendship unlocked, as one of our friends said. That's when that happens. Yeah. When you can actually let your walls down and you're not worried about what anybody thinks.
Yeah.
The accountability, all of that.
Just to let you in, you know, this is the only podcast we've said this on, just to let you in on our friendship. We literally have had, like, just at our houses, dance parties. And when I say dance parties, we sometimes will do our own dance and everybody else sits on the couch and laughs their heads off while we dance by ourselves, being completely goofy. And like, I wouldn't do that with hardly anybody, you know, but to just go, I feel completely comfortable that there is no judgment. There is just laughter and I can be free to be me.
Yeah.
And that is rare. And like Stephanie said, that is not lost on us. And so I think that, like, as people listening out there that might go, I just wish that I could have that. I'm not stupid and goofy like y'all. And that's okay. You don't have to be stupid and goofy. If that's not you, just be you.
Right.
You know,
and you will find other people.
You will find other people. And another thing is, there's a lot of ways that we are completely different from each other. Don't look for people that look just like you. Look for people and let the Holy Spirit lead you to those people. And it's okay to have friends, but then you need that inner circle. So also, be okay with not bringing everyone into your inner circle, because they don't have the right to be there. And that takes time. Yeah. It takes time and the Holy Spirit leading them to be part of that.
Yeah.
But then once they're there, be vulnerable, talk, laugh, enjoy each other, and be there for each other. And don't mess it up.
That's right.
So if somebody went to walk into your church, let's say they just moved to your community, they're on their own, and they want to find a friend, what would you tell them to do?
Don't wait for someone to talk to you. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing. And Jenna will say she's the most introverted of the three of us, but she has learned that sometimes, and she's even said, like, even though she's so introverted, and she, like, when we go to retreats, she's probably the most nervous about meeting all these people and talking and, like, conversing and all of the things, even though she does great at it. She feels very nervous.
Nobody knows she is, because she's out and about.
She's like, do, 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 you know, but she says that she is breaking out of her shell a bit by being on, like, the host team at her church. She has purposely stepped outside of her comfort zone so that she has to greet people and see them. And she has learned that she loves it. And if all of us would just say, even when it's not comfortable, I'm just going to say hi. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Or I'm going to be like, hey, I've noticed that our kids are about the same age. Mm-hmm. Would you like to go to coffee or go to an older lady that maybe you would never think of? Like, if you're, let's say you're 30 and there's this 70-year-old lady and she has all this wisdom, be like, hey, do you mind if we maybe do brunch together or something? I would love to pick your brain or talk with you, ask you questions. You don't know who's going to be your people until you reach out. Like, if you're just waiting for it to come and you're never proactive, that's hard. And I get it. There are people with social anxiety. There are people who are introverts. But and sometimes God will bring someone else to do this, and you will find people that way. But honestly, you gotta just get off the bench. Mm-hmm. You've gotta just say hi.
Make the first move.
You gotta do something, and or find the other person that looks just as awkward as you in the room. And they're looking and they're going, they're not talking to anybody. They're a little, so they might be socially awkward too, and they might totally get you and be like, oh my gosh, yes, that's exactly how I'm feeling. But you gotta be you.
Yeah.
And you gotta make the first move. Even if it is a new church, you know, just got to step out.
I mean, I was just going to say, there's so much freedom in that too. Like, once you do, like, make the first move and you go up to somebody and you're like, hey, like, because I feel like a lot of the time we put on a mask and we feel like we have to be somebody that we're not, just so that somebody will like us. But that's people pleasing. And if somebody says they don't struggle with people pleasing, I'm sorry. I think that's probably not the truth, because we all struggle with that at some point. But there's so much freedom in being able to just be you and who God has called you to be. And once you figure that out, that you're not supposed to be like somebody else. Like, God created you uniquely. So there's just so much freedom in being able to have a friend, friends that you can, you know, be able to just share all with and to, you know, be vulnerable with and, you know, have them hold you accountable for things, pray for you. Like, there's just, it's something really special. So make the first move if you got to, because you need, it's so worth it.
And I was just going to add, ask questions. I think as a generation, I think people are, there's so many people that did not learn how to ask questions because their parents didn't ask them questions.
Yeah.
Their friends didn't ask them questions. And so that's really hard for them. My mom was an amazing mother and did that so well. So I want to know everything about everybody that I meet, and I want to go deep. And I want to hear all of the things, and I want to encourage you through it and laugh with you and cry with you. And so that might not be you, but that doesn't mean you can't change. So like, ask questions and don't be curious. Be curious. And also don't be the one always talking. You probably haven't found friends because all you do is run your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've never given anybody the time of day to actually talk.
Yeah.
So you also need to look inside and go, what might be going on with me that's causing me not to have friends?
Yeah.
Make sure you do that, but then ask questions and get to know people and care more about them than them getting to know you. Care about them. Don't be selfish.
And take that mask off.
Yeah. I know there was one church that we ended up having a rather bad experience with, and we did end up leaving, but there's parts of those years I spent there that were really good. And one of the things I so appreciated, I was involved in praise team. I led a praise team for several years. And on that praise team, we had like a teenage boy. We had like a guy who was in his 60s. We had a couple of single women, like all walks of life, very different ages, genders, everything. And, you know, we wouldn't naturally have hung out together, but seeing each other on a regular basis, you really got to know each other. And we'd have inside jokes. And it was a special time because there's not a lot of other places other than church where you do get into these weird relationships with people that aren't exactly your age, that aren't, you know, that don't hang out in your same social circle. Mm-hmm. But you can feel really connected and really known and loved. And that was special. Yeah. You know, I can still go back and but again, that came because I went and got involved.
Mm-hmm.
I served on that praise team. And sometimes, if it's hard to make friends, you know, volunteer for kitchen duty at a potluck, right? Volunteer for the nursery. And you'll end up talking to people who are also there. So, cause I know that's hard, right? Nobody wants to go through life alone.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us. Is there anything else that you really want to say to people about why you wrote this book or what encouragement that you want to give if we haven't covered it?
We wrote this book because we want to see a healthier, thriving church body.
Yeah.
Not just leaders, but the whole body of Christ. We want to see it start from the top because we're coming from that perspective. But we want to bring truth into the church of the problems that we're facing, but then bring the hope that can come with healing. And how we can actually do that, like practical steps, walking you through, how can we do a better job of leading in the church when it comes to marriage, when it comes to parenting, when it comes to just the church hurt we're seeing and abuse, how can we step in and maybe make some progress with that or help people walk through those hard things? Mm. We just want to see a healthier and more whole church.
Yeah, we want people to. Also, all three of our testimonies are in there of so many things that God has done through our lives and our husbands' lives and our children's lives. And so we know that if we've shared our stories and given God glory and everything, that is what changes lives is the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. Mm-hmm. So we believe that this book is anointed and it is ready to go out to whoever would read or listen. And we hope that it changes lives. And that is for the non-believer all the way up to the senior pastor, that we are all the same and we are created equal, and we need to start living like that and to love people according.
Yeah.
And then also to know that we want to make you laugh too. We want you to cry. We want you to laugh. We want you to know that we are the same and that every pastor wife that you look like and every leader, that they are the same. They deal with the same struggles. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you have heard, if this is going to be the first time you've heard it, that we are the same. So stop putting us on a pedestal. Yeah. We all struggle with the same things.
Yeah.
And so we hope that that comes across in our vulnerability for sure.
That's good. I think you did a great job summing that up right there.
Yes. All right. So the book is Pastor's Wives Tell All. It launches on Monday.
April 30th.
So this is April 25th when this podcast is coming out. So just a couple more days.
Yes.
You can pre-order it now. Remember that when you pre-order early on most platforms, you are guaranteed the lowest price. And the more people pre-order, you cannot believe how much that helps authors because Amazon will order more. If everyone orders on the day that it launches, Amazon often doesn't have enough copies or wherever else you're ordering from. So when you pre-order, you tell Amazon, hey, this is going to be an awesome book. So you better order a lot of them.
Better Amazon. Get a lot of them. That's right. Well, and then also they get gifts. Yes. If they pre-order and they go to our website, pastorswivestellall.com/book.
Yep.
You will see a button somewhere on that page that says claim your pre-order gifts. If you click that and fill out that little tiny short form, you will be given several fun things like the audio version for free.
You're
going to get some cool lock screens for your phone that are just for like the people who claim these. They're really super cute. And then also some printable encouragement cards, things like that. And you get put into the giveaway for we've had one like every month since we started with like pre-orders. And now in the month of April, we have one more. So you'll be put to that giveaway and it's pretty
cool. So that's pastorswivestellall.com/book. Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I will put that link in the podcast notes too. So you go pre-order, get your bonuses. And thank you so much for joining us.
It's been
great to talk to you on this side of the microphone.
Yeah, so much.
We appreciate you and what you're doing.
Yeah,
you're amazing. Like, we love you so much.
Yeah.